For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. The United States Supreme Court's new 6-3 conservative majority was assumed by many to be a death knell for the Affordable Care Act. But a funny thing seems to have happened today during oral arguments. Conservative Justices Roberts and Kavanaugh seem to indicate that they favor leaving the ACA intact, with the exception of the individual mandate. With us now for reaction is state healthcare advocate and UConn law grad Ted Doolittle. Ted, what is your reaction to today's events? Were you surprised?
I wasn't surprised. In a sense, I was pleased because, of course, the issue of whether the entire law is unconstitutional just because one little part of it is in question didn't make any sense to me. So, as an attorney and as an appellate attorney, I was pleased to see that turn of questioning, because even if the individual mandate, the requirement that folks buy the insurance, which isn't enforceable anymore because it's down to $0 as a penalty, then the rest of the law can still stand.
So that's interesting you bring up the fact that it's down to $0. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the individual mandate is a foundation upon which the ACA is built, isn't it? I mean, isn't the requirement that young, healthy people buy health insurance that allows, isn't it that allows for the coverage of pre-existing conditions in older, sicker people? How does the ACA work if there is no penalty or if there is no mandate at all?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And if you asked me that question in 2009, 2010, I would have said, yes, we need to have an individual mandate for the exact reasons that you stated. You know, you need to get the young people who aren't going to get sick and aren't going to be expensive patients in paying their fair share so that they can pay, be in the system their entire life and pay less over a lifetime as opposed to waiting to get their insurance when they get old and sick. So I would have said at that time that the mandate was a necessary part of it. However, we see that in real life, two things happened. First off, the Obama administration never really had the courage of its convictions on the mandate. The mandate was never that large. The maximum that a very high-income person would have paid is $695 a year, which when you compare it to $20,000 or whatever a family policy costs these days, and it's in that neighborhood, it's a small amount of money. There were economists, including economists here at Yale, that argued that the individual mandate penalty should have been something along the lines of like $10,000 or $20,000. That, of course, would have resulted in everybody getting coverage. The penalty of just a couple hundred dollars never really had the oomph to test out whether the individual mandate, in fact, could do its job of getting us to 100% coverage. And now that the mandate has gone away and been away for several years, we realize the following, which is that you don't have to force people to buy health insurance. They want to buy health insurance if they can afford it. So people that can afford health insurance at an affordable price, they want to buy that. You don't need to force them to buy the product. And the mandate has been at $0 for a couple or 3 years now, and we see that, in fact, while a few percentage points dropped, a small percentage of the population did drop their coverage, but most folks maintained it.
Is there any downside to the court saying, hey, you all have to drop the individual mandate that you can identify?
Not right now. I don't think there's. I think it's like a myth. It's like saying that Santa Claus doesn't exist or does exist. It just doesn't matter the on the ground reality of whether there's going to be Christmas presents appearing under the Christmas tree.
Are you saying Santa Claus doesn't exist? Shocker.
I'm saying that kids can believe in Santa Claus or not believe in Santa Claus, and it may make absolutely no difference to what they find under their tree and in their stocking on Christmas morning.
In the Smith household, my daughter knows who Santa is, believe me. All right. What does the ACA mean to Connecticut?
Boy, it means an awful lot. We have, right now, we've got about 100,000, maybe more, of our families in Connecticut who get their insurance through Access Health Connecticut, the Obamacare exchange. We have another 267 or so thousand people on Medicaid. That's in a state of a population of 3.5 million, so that's almost 10% on the Medicaid expansion. We've got 14,000 kids who are 26 or under who have been able to remain on their parents' plans. We've got, it's been estimated, 522,000 folks with pre-existing conditions who wouldn't have been able to buy insurance previously who now can. The folks who have lifetime, the folks who used to have lifetime limits on how much your insurance would pay, you'd have an annual limit on how much your insurance would pay or a lifetime cap. Those have gone away. About 1.2 million people would have those lifetime and annual limits, and that's gone away. The state is getting $1.4 billion in Medicaid money through the, we call Medicaid here Husky, through the Husky D program. That brings in $1.4 million into the healthcare economy of our state. And we have nearly $500 million, John Henry, of premium subsidies that people are getting subsidized to buy their insurance on the Access Health exchange. So wide-ranging throughout our whole community impact of the ACA.
You must talk to the insurance industry a fair amount. What do you hear from Connecticut's insurance industry about their thoughts on all of this?
So here's the thing. I think that the insurance industry likes the ACA. They didn't fight it. They didn't try to kill it when it first came in. It's increased their profit over the insurance companies are doing terrific. The stocks of the insurance companies have multiplied many times since the passage of the ACA. So they're doing fine. I don't think they want some of their best clients to be kicked off their plans. So any idea that folks might have that the insurance companies are the evil giants who want to get rid of the ACA, I don't think that's right. I think in fact, they appreciate it in certain ways, and it even gives them the ability to not do things they don't want to do. I don't think anybody at the insurance company wants to take away people's insurance if they have a pre-existing condition. But if they are allowed to do that, they know the next insurance company down the block is going to be aggressive and not sell a policy to that sick family. So they have to compete. It's a downward spiral. It's the lowest common denominator. The ACA put in a floor. Now all the insurance companies know, it's okay for me to insure a sick family, because all the insurance companies in Connecticut have to insure that sick family without dinging them and kicking them out for a pre-existing condition. So I think the insurance companies benefit from this and are not opposed to the ACA at all.
What sense do you make of arguments made by those who want to get rid of the ACA? Do you believe that they believe the reasons that they offer, or do you think there's any deeper unspoken reasons?
I think the deeper unspoken reasons are that they feel that the ACA is somehow a handout. That comes from a fundamental philosophical divide in our country between those who think that health care is a right and those who think that health care is not a right, and that if you can't afford decent health care for your family, you don't deserve it. That's the unspoken dividing line here.
State healthcare advocate Ted Doolittle, thank you so much for the time.
My pleasure, John Henry. It's good to be with you.